Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and also on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Deezer, Google, iHeartRadio, everywhere you get podcasts. This is the Dark Mark Show. Probably should have had you adjust that first.
I'm sorry. I just realized.
With that? Yeah.
Sounds like
a little
bad
bass.
Yes.
A little noise. I didn't realize.
I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and it's Halloween month. It continues.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, speaking of Halloween, there's a treat right there.
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite vegan heavy metal DJ, Hannah Bach.
Yeah. A little bit more of a ghoul than a treat.
Well, you know what's weird? Because you showed off your ink last week.
Uh-huh.
And you, I didn't know you never. It just hit me like today that you never had ink before.
No, I have. I got my first tattoo when I was 18, and then I got another one when I was in my 20s.
Oh, because
it's on my back though.
Because somebody was going to tattoo you on the air, and you said no.
I didn't say no. I was going to let Dangerous D put Slayer in my inner lip.
Dangerous D.
Dangerous D was going to come in, and he wanted to tattoo both of us in the studio. We still might do that. We still got a couple more weeks here at the Ruby, so we'll see what happens. But
we love Dangerous D.
We love Dangerous D. Yes,
we do.
And how was your week?
My week?
Yes.
Oh, it was fun. I went to this I Like Scary Movies thing in downtown LA.
What's that?
They have a bunch of movie props, Nightmare on Elm Street, mm-hmm. And you just take photos with it. It's fun.
Okay.
They tell you a lot about the movie, and you go into these little rooms.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I did a show at the CIA a couple months ago.
You did.
Which I do periodically. Over a year and a half, I've done probably six or seven. You always say you're going to go.
I do.
Because this is a place for you, and you're going to find out why, because right here is one of my best friends, and have you ever seen Blood Diner?
Yes, I have, actually.
Do you recognize who's right to your left?
I don't, but I have seen that because I remember that title.
That is the proprietor of the CIA, the Barnum of Burbank, the star of Blood Diner, the star
Georgie.
And director of Writer. Is it coming back to you?
Yeah.
Of The Secret Life of Jeffrey Dahmer, and the CIA is a place that has not one, not two, but three corpses on display. Carl Crew.
Hello.
Hello.
Killing me.
Yes. Third time you've been on the show. First time you've been actually with another full-size guest. Because first time you were by
That's
yourself.
Terrible. You should not talk
I'm
about
I'm not talking
her
about
like
Hannah.
That.
Hannah, no. You remember Michael Gogan? Who do you think introduced me to Michael Gogan? It was this guy.
Okay.
And the full-size, and the thing is, I did the show. And actually, sometimes the sideshow acts do get a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the magicians get a lot of attention. This show, the crowd went crazy for all the comedians, with good reason, because I stacked the deck with a lot of good to great acts. This is a great guy that I had on.
Brilliant.
Different acts. Brilliant. He's been on Comedy's Dirtiest Dozen with Chris Rock and Tim Allen. His name's on the comedy.
And Hicks.
And Bill Hicks. That's right. I forgot Bill Hicks is in that. He was in he was in Sam Kinison's documentary. He apparently was in Suicide Kings, which I forgot.
And,
no, actually, I was on production on Suicide Kings.
Oh, okay,
that's exciting.
I'll tell that story.
That's
it's a good,
great
funny
movie.
Story.
Been,
it is a great movie. Yeah,
he's been out. He's in the Five Heartbeats. He's been right.
Yes, I was in the Five Heartbeats.
Five Heartbeats.
All I Want for Christmas with Leslie Nielsen and Thora Birch.
Right.
And let's not forget that blockbuster.
Yeah.
Runaway sci-fi classic starring Bridget Nielsen, and that was called Galaxus.
I've seen Galaxus.
And, yes. Me and Freddie Asparagus were in that.
I remember. I just saw Three Amigos. I forgot all about Freddie Asparagus.
And Freddie, me and Freddie. That was the only movie we got to do together. And,
right.
It was a lot of fun.
Anyway, these are two raconteurs. We're going to hear all sorts of stories.
Yeah, I
before can raconteur. What is that exactly? I don't.
A storyteller.
Oh, I thought it was somebody that owned a lot of stuff or something. A rock and
I prefer Grievous Tartuffles.
Right, right. Yeah. No.
How dumb I am. I'm sorry.
No, that's a hoarder. Dumb. A hoarder collects a bunch of stuff.
That's not a hoarder.
I'm calling you a hoarder. I don't
Hoarders,
know.
No. A hoarder is someone that has garbage in their house.
Yeah.
A collector has stuff, and when you go in there and go, you got all this stuff. Yes, I just sold that over there. A guy's coming to pick it up for $1,100. So don't tell me what I... You,
no, but if somebody has a bunch of stuff, like Carl Crew, and he's got all sorts of stories about it, that's a raconteur.
Well, okay. Yes, okay.
Anyway.
So I guess I qualify sort of as a kind of a rack... rack.
You got a nice rack there.
Oh, well, thank you. But you know, I was watching. I was eating across the street.
Uh-oh.
No, I was eating across the street at the Sunset Grill.
Oh, Sunset Grill.
I haven't eaten at the Sunset Grill in over 30 years, and it looks completely different now. But they
How was the Sunset Grill 30 years ago when Don Henley was writing songs about it?
Oh, go back to the early 80s. It was just a little place, and you sat in the front on stools.
Right.
You never
went
in there. You couldn't go in. It was just
right.
And the old guy was, and that's what it was. And comedians, all of us, would go eat there sometimes really late at night, and you'd watch the working girls walk by.
Right.
But I was eating there.
That's the song, I think.
Yeah. Watch the working girls go by.
Right.
Okay. So. I'm sitting in there, and the big screen's on, and J-Lo is on. And she's with Alex Rodriguez, who I used to like as a Yankee, but he just said they're not going to win the World Series. I screw him. But anyway, I'm looking at J-Lo, and not to be sexist or anything, but I realize she's not that endowed. She's not very
big. She's not busty.
Yeah, she's not busty at all. I always thought she was.
It's all in her ass.
Well, I guess. I mean, you know, but I'm trying to be...
Look,
I wrote J-Lo got small boobs, but I didn't want to say that.
Yes.
But, you know, who am I to say?
I would say she's beautiful, just like Hannah.
Oh, she's gorgeous. I mean, yeah.
I am not even on the same level as that woman.
No, but you're
yeah, you're much higher, darling.
You're on a much higher level. Trust me.
You're a beautiful, terribly, I mean, you've got, what, B's?
A.
A,
very proud holder of an A cup.
See, there's nothing wrong with that.
Hey, my boobs are bigger than Baltimore.
I was giving you a boob.
Before we get started with these boobs, go to Audible, audibletrial.com/DMS. You can get comedy books, comedy albums, books about the sideshow, about all sorts of, whatever book you want. It doesn't matter. 50 Shades of Grey, get a Harry Potter book, whatever you want. You get one book. And two Audible originals. Now, Alien 3, not a great movie. But William Gibson, the cyberpunk writer, wrote a different script. And they got Michael Biehn, Lance Henriksen, and an all-star cast to do an audiobook of the script.
Oh, wow.
I was just telling Carl how much I like Kate McKinnon on Saturday Night Live. She did an Audible original where she plays their fairy princesses. Her and her sister did a whole thing. It should be great. Bob Newhart interviews up-and-coming comics. That's an Audible original you can get. Of course, when I say up and coming, I mean like Will Ferrell and Judd Apatow and people in their 50s. But he's 90, so to him, they're coming up. Yeah. You can get one free book, two Audible originals. Go to audibletrial.com/DMS. You say that, but I've had a lot of people go, what's the code? What's the code? Because they're taking advantage of it. So it's audibletrial.com/DMS. Just got back from Portland. I was listening to audiobooks. It's great. One more sponsor before the shenanigans start.
On me, Doomy's Home Cooking.
Because you're vegan.
Yes, because I'm vegan.
Have you either of you been to? See, you went to Sunset Grill. Have you? You got to go to Doomy's Home Cooking one of these days.
Okay.
Right in the corner of Fountain of Vine, right next to the M Bar. Mm-hmm. Oh. The best vegan food you've ever had.
It really is. You can choose from
Mexican. You don't have to be vegan to enjoy it. If you like Philly cheesesteaks, you like pulled pork sandwiches, yeah. You like a Big Macs. They have that on the secret menu.
The old there was a place on Third Avenue 100 years ago called I can't remember what it was. It was a Sikh restaurant. It was all vegan.
Right.
Oh, wow.
And it was really good. I can't remember the name of it, but the Golden Temple. Yes,
right.
The Golden Temple.
Oh.
Yes. And yeah. Ron Bear worked there. Ron Bear is the Indian fellow that's in Down and Out in Beverly Hills when they're all at the table, the big fellow with the beard. He, I believe he owned it or ran it. But
at Doobie's, LA Weekly said their nachos were one of the 10 best nachos in LA, and it doesn't have meat. That's how good it is. 1253 Vine Street. They got one in Culver City, one in Toronto, Canada. Now...
I have to tell my brother about it. He's like hardcore vegan.
No way. I don't have brought him.
No, I don't eat anything with a face or a family.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
It's you know, I mean, you know, everybody's going vegan now. I heard Pizza Hut's got vegan pizzas now. Burger King's got vegan burgers. But forget that. Go to where it originated. Doomy's Home Cooking, the original vegan junk food.
And if you're in the Culver City area, catch their brunch on the weekends.
Yes, they have brunch on the weekends.
Yeah.
So you've never been to the California Institute of Abnormal Arts?
No, I have not.
Now, or otherwise known as the CIA, otherwise
Actually,
now known as Chinatown
East. We don't call ourselves the CIA anymore.
Right, but you started as the CIA.
California Institute of Abnormal Arts. We got nicknamed the CIA. I got tired of answering the phone. CIA, people go, click, yeah.
Right.
So now we've reinvented ourselves, and we call ourselves Chinatown Circus.
Okay,
because
I like
we
that.
Went all ancient Chinese secret.
Right. Well, you've gone through several, and this is... When did you first open? That was 20 years. It's got to be 25 years
25
ago.
25 years, yeah. 94.
94. Okay. And it was all black then.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we didn't have dime one. It was originally. I took the building over to make a distribution company for the movies I had made, and
right.
And I had like six people in there on phones, and it was like this creepy old building, and we got just sucked dry by Ma Bell and UPS. So it was like, okay, this is not right. gonna work. My friend comes over. He goes, "Hey, I want to have an Academy Awards party." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So a week before that, I got all these sets given to me from the home show, Gary Collins. But I had to take them all. So like with a 40-foot low boy, you know. So we just moved them all in. We arranged them all. We had this party, and it was like 300 people. And we're like, "Oh, huh, okay." So we opened for a year underground with no license. One, it was just like hardcore art. You know, and we actually eventually somebody dropped a dime, and there was 300 people there, yeah. And it was
that
so
means they called the cops, Hannah,
yeah, big time, cops and fire, and it was hilarious. Right. It was epic,
right?
And they were walking through, and 300 people stood across the street going, "You," yelling at the cops. I'm like, "Okay, everyone, go home now, yeah." And like the cops are walking around, just going, "This is highly organized." And I'm like, what? You know, they just didn't understand art. So.
Right.
But then we took about 8 months. We got all our licenses. And then we've opened for legally for 25 years.
Right. Wow. Did you start with the carnival design right away?
No, it was all black and white, but it was black. And we had it black light, different places. So you literally did not know where you were.
Right.
You know, you that was the whole point, was getting away from wherever you are, getting out of your comfort zone and seeing something different. It's still the point.
Right.
But we had a rubber brick wall on hinges that was 20 feet tall.
Wow.
And a fake Brady Bunch fireplace. And if you knew how to pass through the shadow, it looked like you walked through a wall. So it was the secret entrance to the CIA. Oh,
wow.
Yeah, it was funny.
Now, I know Hannah's allergic to the Valley, but Joe, you've lived in the Valley.
Too long.
Did you know the CIA was there?
In all the time that I have lived there and driven down Burbank Boulevard, I glanced over, seen it, had no idea what was there. When I went to do the show that night, one of the acts that was there, a girl and a guy, I can't think of her name, she was on, the fellow was completely gray. He's goth. And his wife, I believe, was there, and she looked like a harlequin. She was a goth like harlequin, and they let me in through the entertainer's door. They said, "Oh, you go in through
there." Stage door, yeah.
And I walked in, and immediately I was like,
"Oh, that's Mortis and Lillian. They'll be here next week."
Oh, okay, yeah, Lillian. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah,
Mortis and Lillian.
Yeah, and I went in, and I immediately I was like, "Oh God, I worked for Forry Ackerman. I worked for Famous Monsters magazine back in the day.
Cool.
So I used to walk around in his mansion down in the basement going, "Oh my God, that's the creature from the block. I'm going to touch
him." Wow.
See, what I used to do there was at lunchtime, Forry always wanted me to go to lunch with him. And I didn't always want to go because he always wanted to eat a house of pies, and everything there tastes like they just grilled it.
Yeah.
Coffee tastes like they pour it on the grill, scrape it into the cup.
I live right down.
I would say, "No, Forry, I brought lunch and I want to catch up." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And he'd leave. And I'd go into the one room where there was a closet that you'd open up with a glass door. And in it were the original hat and cape from London After Midnight, Lon Chaney's makeup box. One of Lugosi's Dracula capes from a play.
Wow.
Right.
So I'd sit there and put the clothes on and eat.
Famous Monsters magazine was like, pre-Fangoria. It was like the big...
It's the original.
It's the original.
It's the first.
That was like, it started in the 60s or 50s?
57, I think. And 55 went, or 56, 57.
And it went to like the 80s or 90s,
It's still around. It still comes out every few months. The thing that I have at home was a Creature from the Black Lagoon, the mask, the original head, and the hands the
claws,
right. Whatever you want to pull, yeah. Whatever.
The fins or whatever.
The fin, whatever those were up on a shelf, and they were deteriorating. And I managed to get a little jar and put some of it pieces in the jar. And I took the jar out the other day, and it's turned into powder. It's like deteriorating.
Oh,
yeah. But I don't know whatever, and nobody will believe me when I go, like, I'm hanging around with my friends, and I go, look, this is from the creature. Oh, how did you get that? So
you take medication for that.
Yeah, this isn't the coke I started with Sam Kinison. This is the
no, this is just
creatures actually.
You know, by the way, if you like gaming, I'm on Twitch. It's a show called Rule of Thirds. Rule of Thirds on Twitch, and we're on Sundays. My friend and I, Devin Hammond.
Well, check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, Devin Hammond is a really great guitar player, musician, or whatever. But he's also a game nut, and we fish a lot of the old games out. This week we'll be playing WWF and possibly Missile Command.
Well, yeah, you're a big wrestling fan. We're gonna get to that because Carl played a wrestler.
Oh yeah,
In Blood Diner, it's all coming back to you, right?
Yeah,
right,
Hannah? Yeah.
By the way, I had Bela Lugosi's suitcase.
Oh,
yeah, it was Bela Lugosi in gold on it. It was really sad. I gave it to a friend of mine named Drac, who was in a band. Just here, take this. Yeah. But I used to have an antique store in the Haight-Ashbury. Grew up in going to garage sales and flea markets. I used to go to the Sausalito flea market. Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Big trucks pulling in with all these tins from the 20s, soda tins with the plastic wax paper still on it, all yellowed.
Yeah,
Art Deco was garbage. You know, like, that was in the 80s, you know.
But your family, your lineage is interesting.
I'm no lineage.
Because your uncle is the
foremost. Show me $10.
Your uncle is the foremost Bigfoot expert.
Oh, yeah. I've spent the last 8 months writing the Bigfoot script about my great uncle. I'm still not done with it. I'm about three quarters of the way through.
Have you been interviewed on any other podcast about Bigfoot?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I made friends with Ken Gearhard, who was on Missing in Alaska. Ken and Jax, they came down and I give a tour, you know, and we ended up on, I have the fake head of Bigfoot and I say, you know, it's a gaffe. But my great uncle, you know. And they freaked out because they knew all about my great uncle. And he, with Jerry Crew, he was the first person to take a plaster cast in 1958 on Mount Shasta. And the name Sasquatch changed to Bigfoot with his discovery. It went global. It went global.
Did you know Gene Bell from Trancas up in on Trancas in Malibu, the club?
Nope.
His whole all over the place was nothing but Bigfoot artifacts.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, he had a footprint.
I have a copy of Jerry's. It's third pass though, but I've interviewed all these people, everyone that's still alive. My father passed away in 2017, but I had already talked to him about that. He was there. And my other uncle, who's still around, Jim Crew. Jim Crew and Jerry Crew, my great uncle, were hired by a millionaire from Texas named Tom Slick. This guy, Google him, mind-blowing. He was just like into all this crazy. He hired this guy named Peter Burns to hunt Yeti in the Himalayas. And I got to interview Peter Burns twice so far. He's 90, lives in the Dalles. He's like the Don Quixote Indiana Jones. I mean, this guy, and he doesn't take any, you know, like, you have to be very, very succinct when you talk to him. He's very cool. He told me all these stories. And so, I mean, also my Uncle Jim, who was there also, who was hired, he gave me 50 years of yellowed newspaper articles and magazines and everything. And I've gone through all of it. I'm writing the script of Jerry Crew's life. And he's the only one, everyone who ever met him said the one word that stood out was integrity. The guy taught Sunday school. He was not a drinker. He could fix anything. And I still, you know, I'm friends with his kids, you know, Wade and Hiram. And it's kind of a collaborative. When I'm finished with the first draft, I'm sending it to all of them so to say anything else they can put in. But just amazing story.
Well, what's the artifact that you've seen that really convinces you? Everything I've seen is kind of, I mean, I haven't seen near what you've seen.
Well,
I saw the fake movie and
all the movies. Like, you see, the thing is this whole script is going to be about taking the truth that's grown into a legend,
right,
and paring it back down to show the truth, okay? Because the irony is my uncle never saw them. My great uncle never saw them, only heard them. They found feces, and they sent it to Berkeley.
Okay.
And they had it examined. Analyzed, and yeah. What they said was, they couldn't figure out what it was from, but it was either from a human or an ape. And it, because it carried the same type of bacteria that only have is in here, you know, it's like, but that's nothing compared to all the other artifacts and stuff. I mean, there's just so much. It's unbelievable.
The famous film of the Bigfoot
Patterson Gimlin film. Yes.
Is that?
That's absolutely real.
You know, I thought so, because you know, a human guy could not put that on and walk with that kind of gait.
Thank you. That you said the correct word. Also, my great uncle drew the map for Bob Titmuss. I love saying that name, Titmuss.
Yes.
Who
That's
gave
almost it, as good as Jerry Slick.
Yeah, there you go. Who gave it to Gimlin. Wow. And this was like right in the same area where he got this. So, yeah. Fascinating stuff, though. We're going to be showing, we're going to be talking about what we really think it is. And it goes, you know, there was a whole thing about the hoax, Ray Wallace hoax. You know, this guy, he was so jealous of Jerry. And he was working with him up there as part of his construction company. They were clearing roads. And, you know, Jerry was on a tractor, you know, like a crawler. And they would cut through the deep forest. You know, this had never been seen by anybody. And my father was down, was pouring water on the roads because the dust was this thick.
Yeah.
And when Ray Wallace had these fake prints made, and he stomped all around him, and he's, and then when he died, this is 10 years after Jerry died, his family came out, we can finally tell the world, Bigfoot is dead. And like Jay Leno, Shep Smith, went worldwide. Yeah, he's dead. It was all Ray Wallace.
That was on Art Bell. It's possible that Bigfoot is dead.
Yeah.
We have on.
So from what you're talking, there's more than one Bigfoot, though.
Of course there is.
There has to be different.
I was recently on Coast to Coast for a little bit. Just I called
McNory
in and they kept me.
Or you called it?
Nori.
Nori.
I called in and they had this kook on there who's talking about, yeah, it's the Bigfoot, it's the aliens and blah, blah, blah. And he kept me in. I go, they knew who I was. And I said, yeah, it sounded like I was listening to L. Ron Hubbard there for a second. You know,
I think I was listening that night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have to wait till the first 20 minutes of George Nori is the "We love Donald Trump and everyone who doesn't is a scumbag." And when you get after that, I tune in about 10:30 because then he gets off his Donald Trump bullshit.
Right.
And I was on the show like 9 days before 9/11.
Oh, wow.
I was on talking
about. What were you on about?
I was on Ian Punnett. A week before that, they were talking about the Atuk script.
The cursed Atuk.
And a guy calls up and goes, "I know all about the Atuk script. Sam Kinison looked at it, and the next day he was killed. And John Candy looked at it, and the next day he died." And I got on the, and I sent a little email. I said, "Look, I was with Sam.
I wrote
the Atuk script." Yeah. It didn't that didn't happen. This, if you want to vet me, you can check who I am. And I get a phone call. This was on a Saturday night. I get it was on a Sunday night. I send the thing to Ian Punnett. The next day I get a phone call from his assistant.
Right.
"Would you like to do the show?"
Right.
They vetted me that fast. I was like, wow. So I did the show. I was supposed to be on for an hour. I wound up being on for 2 hours.
Wow.
We talked about everything. We talked about, he just kept asking me. And I'll tell the true story. My story never changes because I only tell the truth.
Right.
And, for 9 days, it was September 2nd. For 9 days, 1,000 emails, this, that. Wow. 9/11, that's the end of that.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I mean, God forbid.
You think that's connected somehow?
Well, I think.
Oh, come on.
I'm
trying to start a conspiracy. Come on.
Yeah.
It's a Joey Gaynor conspiracy.
Yeah, it was all my fault.
Right. Yeah.
Well, let me explain.
I told that cab driver to go scratch his ass, and that's what happened.
Let me explain to Hannah and our audience.
Hannah sitting here. And
I know Hannah's
words.
Right there.
Not right.
Hannah, there was a script called Atuk about about an Eskimo, and every fat guy in Hollywood, fat funny guy, was attached to it.
Started with Belushi.
Started with Belushi, and then Belushi died. Then Sam Kinison was attached. He died.
John Candy. It goes Kinison, then John Candy, then Farley. No, it's Belushi, then Candy, then Farley. No, then Kinison, then Farley. There might have been one other guy. I don't know. But that's the only four guys I know who died from it. Well, but Kinison died like 2, 3, 4 years later. Because he never even read the script. It's like I was at the going-away party before the...
Yeah, tell the story, because the story's great.
We're at the going-away party at Sam's house. He's going to go and shoot in New York.
This is his first big starring role.
This is the biggest thing. And I hope they have medicine next door.
paying him millions of dollars for his first lead movie.
They're going to give him all this money. And I'm up at the house, and we're having this big going-away party, and everybody's there. So I go over
milk and cookies is a Sam Kinison party tends to be.
Yeah, a lot of milk and cookies.
Yes.
So I said to him, so you like the script? Is it, you know, it sounds like it's going to be really funny. Do you like it? You know, and he turns to me and he goes, I haven't read it yet. And I looked at him. I went, you start shooting this coming like Wednesday. You haven't read the script? He goes, no, I'm going to read it on the plane. And then any changes, we'll do those. And then we'll, you know. And I said, well, Sam, not for nothing, but I mean, that's not how it works. You're going to tell them when you get there, I don't want to do this, this, and this. You should have told them that 3 months ago. Now you're going to have a... So he got really pissed off. What do you know? Well, that's right. What happened. He got there. I don't want to do this. You got me screaming in every scene, blah, blah, blah. My friend who was the writer with him, Dan Barton, was telling me Sam went in and I'm not going to do this. We got to shut down production. And they just said, that's it. Goodbye. This is not how you do this. And
he was never in a movie again.
It was. It's a shame because he was fantastic in Back to School. I mean, it's a shame.
And it's interesting that he had that because it reminded me. I did a show with the late Taylor Negron. I know you know him.
Taylor was great.
And I was telling
Fox.
But I asked him because every movie he was in, he stole the scene. And I was like, how do you do that? I just throw the script. If the script's terrible, which they normally are, I just throw it away and improvise and just keep improvising. And finally, they keep the shot. But he was always a supporting character. And when you're a lead, it's a whole different thing. Back to School, he improvised a lot. And he thought he could do that for the lead.
Well, that's because Rodney said go nuts.
Right.
You know, Rodney and Harold Ramis really directed Back to School.
Right.
The original director that was on that, it was more like, oh, what are we doing? Oh, that's great. Okay, I'm going to smoke a cigarette over here. I don't know what to do. Anyway, and I heard that from a lot of people, not just from one guy. But
right.
I don't know. I forget the director's name on it. Alan Smithy or whatever it is.
Right.
But anyway.
I got that joke, by the way.
Yeah, well, you and...
Three other people,
and a couple directors had Alan Smithy credits, but the young comedians must just love hanging out with you because there's a whole comedy nerd culture now, where people really love the history of
comedy.
It's
really funny. I'm going to be 64 years old. I make no bones about it.
But you don't look it.
No,
okay, you look great.
Yeah.
Anyway. So you look 64 years old?
No, you don't.
Not yet.
Anyway.
Yeah,
but. I hope I'm not ill. I've been losing weight. I keep knocking wood, but I shouldn't do that because
I noticed that you lost weight when I saw you.
I've been ill. But no, actually, I gave up sugar.
Good.
I got rid of white sugar. And it helped a lot. It really changes your whole life.
It brings a zzz down to...
It got rid of all of that, and I don't care about a lot of stuff I used to, you know, like, what did Trump say? Oh, now I could care less. I'm not voting for him, so what's the difference?
Yeah.
I'm not going to waste all that time. What was we talking about?
No. You are a virtual history of comedy. You told me that when your first time doing stand-up, was at the Comedy Store.
Very first time.
And Mitzi Shore passed you.
What happened was, I was, in 1975, I went to see Alan Reddy at the amphitheater. My uncle was a ticket broker, a big one here in L.A. So he took us to the amphitheater, but Freddie Prinze was opening for Alan Reddy. So we were really there to see Freddie Prinze.
Wow.
And I got to see Freddie Prinze. The only other live stand-up I'd ever seen is when I was a little kid. I stood on a milk box in front of at the back window of the Club Miami in Kingsburg, New Jersey, and watched Rodney.
Oh, wow.
And then I thought I could get away with the second show, and a big meaty hand was on my neck. Hey, kid, you can't stand here in the alley.
Well,
so that was the end of that. But anyway, I saw Freddie Prinze. And then that October, the following, it was in August of 75, October 75, Richard Pryor does a week at the Pantages. And I go to see him three nights. And I'd never seen anything like that. Pryor came out, and this is right after Patty Hearst and everything. And Pryor walks out on stage, silence. And he goes, "Patty Hearst, bitch got some dick and went crazy." And the place went nuts. And I'd never seen anything like that. So I watch him. And then I said, you know, I heard there's this place called a Comedy Store, and Richard Pryor hangs out there.
Right.
So I start driving to the, I'm 19, barely 20 years old. I'm driving to the Comedy Store every night. I'm sitting there.
Right.
And I see this guy, Paul Mooney.
Wrote for Richard Pryor.
Who wrote for Richard Pryor. But I didn't know that. Yes. And I'm like, wow, I thought Pryor was crazy. This guy's really wild.
Right.
So now every night I'm at the Comedy Store like it's night school. And I keep going and going until March of 76. I wanted to go on, and I had the greatest thing ever happen. I went over to Steve Landisberg, Dietrich on Barney Miller.
Barney Miller.
And I was a big fan of his. And I said to him, you know,
he's great.
Open mic nights, potluck night, what they called it. Right, they never called it, Mitzi never called it open mic.
It's still called potluck night.
Right, it's potluck night. It's the right name.
And oh, so, yes, it is.
Oh, boy, is it ever.
Yeah.
And so I said to Steve, we were all standing around outside, I said, you know, they give you 5 minutes, but I mean, is that enough time to really get them going? And Steve was about 6'2", and I'm 5'8". He just looks down at me and very, very gently says, well, it's a fucking eternity if you're not funny. That's and I just looked at him and went, oh, please, can we go over to the Hyatt here in a club? Tell me what a if he didn't tell me that, I probably wouldn't be a comedian. I probably went up there and been a complete asshole and just said, fuck this. They don't know.
And you know what? That's exactly what happened the first time I did comedy at the Comedy Store. No, I did comedy in junior high school a couple times. But the first time I was in a club was Comedy Store in La Jolla. And I had that attitude where I was like, okay, my material's brilliant. It's going to kill. It was actually a comedy contest, and it was awful. The material
was really lucky.
But
I had never done stand-up in my life. Right, I was a musician. I was a singer. And I was in bands and all of this. And then I started to go to the Comedy Store, and I saw one guy after another, and I said, wow, this is a lot better than bands. I can deal with the 80 personalities in my head instead of the other 47 I got to deal with five other guys.
Right.
And when he told me that, I went home and I started to write an act.
Right.
I really tried to write an act and really timed it. And he said, if you got 3 minutes, do three. If you got four, there's no overtime. You don't stand up there taking a beating.
It's better to go short to go long.
Yeah, I still have the tape. I mean, I still have the recording of it.
Wow.
I was doing Richard Pryor doing the weather. And as Richard Pryor, I said the N-word. Nobody got mad because I'm doing Richard Pryor.
Right.
This is 1976.
Yeah.
My act was completely ethnocentric, and it still is.
Yeah.
But I got over, and it took me another 2 years to really know what I was doing.
Right.
And Mitzi actually at one point said, you gotta go somewhere else. You're not funny anymore. And that killed me. And then I said, I got to go get funny. So I went everywhere else and learned to get funny.
So she passed you and then took it away.
Right, and took it away. And it was the best thing she ever did. And then luckily I got to study comedy again with guys like Mitch Walters and Biff Maynard and
improv or the Ice House? Or?
I did the improv and I did the Comedy Store, and Bud began to give me spots. And then in 78, Mitzi started giving me spots, and I got to thank guys like Bob DeSimone, wherever you are, he's around. I mean, I just want to give him a shout out because he had a little place on La Cienega called Studio 3, and we could go play there on the weekends.
Right.
Me, Gary Shandling, this guy Tim Havey that was writing for people. It was a bunch of us, and we would go there on a Friday and Saturday night, and suddenly we're working to Friday and Saturday night crowds.
Right.
It was a bottle club. They brought their own, you know. But that was that whole summer, and it was just the best. You got to figure out, and we would dress up and go do a real show. So by the time I was going to audition for her again, I was, you know, I knew what I was doing.
So how was Shandling?
Shandling, you know what was funny?
So you saw Shandling bomb.
Yeah, he would bomb you. This is what was really funny.
One of the greatest comedians of all time.
Yeah, he would come there, and he wanted to do stand-up, and we were in our own little clique. I mean, it was me, the late Tim Havey, who wrote for Jackie Vernon and a bunch of people. Okay. Very funny guy. Another guy, Mark Goldstein, who's gone now, who was so funny off stage.
Right.
Then you get on stage, and you wonder, what are you doing? But, no, great guy. He was my friend. I'm not. There was a bunch of, I can't remember everybody. Yeah. Wayne Klein, a big writer. Yeah. But Gary would go on, and we'd all go outside, and he'd be on to like the last six people that were left at the end of the night.
I can't even imagine this.
And Gary'd be up there, and finally one night he'd say, "Hey guys, you know, he sits and watches us. This is shitty. Let's go." So we'd go in and watch him, and Gary would come off, and he would literally come up and go, "What'd you think of that? Was that funny? I don't know. How's my hair? Yeah. Was my hair okay?"
Oh, great.
Always about the hair.
Yeah.
And then right about the time I started to perform regularly at the store, Gary was starting to get spots at the store because Mitzi said, "You're a writer." Yeah, but I want to do stand-up. And son of a bitch, he was a funny man.
He was great.
A great, funny man. And to see him go from where we weren't even watching him to like, boom, you know, because he was always writing for TV shows and everything.
My old friend Richard Day wrote for the Gary Shandling Show.
Oh, that was which one? Not Larry Sanders, the other one?
He wrote for both.
Both?
Yeah, I believe so.
Because the first one on Showtime was great.
Yeah.
This is the Gary Shandling Show.
Yeah. That was the best.
That was such a great show.
But his stand up I saw it, it was polished.
He's the only guy I know who would get away with a dirty joke like, "Yeah, sorry, the other day I was in Baskin Robbins and the girl said, I said, what kind of flavors do you have? She said, well, we have this one, we have banana chocolate. And I went, oh, do you have banana in my pants flavor? And I'm on the floor, man. I mean, that banana in my pants flavor. And I wouldn't be surprised if he really said that to her.
Yeah.
Because he would say something in a manner that you go, oh, well, let me look. Banana in my pants, you know. And I got to work with him in La Jolla. I got to work with him a lot. I worked with Gary a bunch, Mission Valley.
So you got to see him go from okay to great. One of the greatest of all time.
It was really funny. Then I didn't see him for a long time.
Right.
And I was at the Ice House. I was running shows at the Ice House. I was doing the smaller room.
Right.
And he was doing the thing in the other room, and I went into the dressing room. So I stood in the door of the dressing room, and I'm saying, "Hey, Gary, how you doing?" I was wearing a bowling shirt. And he looks up, and he goes, "Who are you?" He recognized me. And I go, "Oh, I'm the guy who works on your cars." And he goes, and he seriously goes, "Oh, you work on the Porsche or the Audi? Which one do you work on?" And I went, "I don't work on fucking cars, man. It's Joey. How are you?" And he goes, "Oh, I never recognize you." So we sit down, we're talking, and he has two other young fellas with him that were, I guess, writers or whatever they were doing with him. And he looks at me and he goes, "Life's hard, isn't it?" And I looked at him, I went, "Not for you." Life is hard. What kind of question is that? You know?
But you saw all these comics at their embryonic stage. You saw Sam Kinison bomb. I saw
Sam Kinison bomb in Texas. I saw him bomb here because he was screaming and yelling and he didn't have it. I mean, I've seen a lot of people bomb.
I mean, but you've seen people at the beginning of the
show. Yeah, I've seen some of the greatest acts that ever eat the bird. And that's what you do. I mean, that's what happens.
What about Chris Farley?
With Chris Farley, if you remember the old, what was that place? We used to do wrestling shows there. No, it was in Hollywood. Had a big dragon thing up on the, I can't think of the name, but it'll come to me in a minute. And then they shut it down. But we used to do a wrestling show with Johnny Legend every month.
Oh, wow. That's
every month. Incredibly Strange Rock and Roll Wrestling.
Right.
And one Saturday night, well, Chris Jericho would show up and all these different guys that were wrestlers when they were in town and hang out. And we do it. It was rock and roll bands and wrestling. And my manager character was L. Ron Farrakhan.
Oh, true.
And he's a Mausoleontologist. He's buying up Hollywood Boulevard, and it's just crazy. And my whole thing was unity through division. That's what I would preach. So I'm up there preaching one night. I'm doing my whole shtick. And all of a sudden, I feel a huge arm around my shoulder and, like, weight, and I'm dropping, and it's Chris Farley.
Wow.
and he jumps on me and he grabs the mic and he, this man's doing God's work. And he's up there with me for like 20 minutes. If anybody out there has the video, please, please let it out. Let it out to the world. It was one of the greatest things I can remember. And he was really partying. And it was about 2 months before he passed away.
Wow. And, he was brilliant.
He was. Moguls. The name of the joint was Moguls.
Right.
Moguls.
The big, it had like 9 rooms. And when we would do a show, like Ian Whitcomb would come in the other room and he'd do some music and then he'd sell a bunch of records. And right. And it would, and Eric Caden from Hollywood Book and Poster would have a whole thing set up with all kinds of stuff. And it was a happening. Every once a month, very it was cool. packed to the gills.
Right. And I'll tell you what's happening is the Chinatown East.
That's a happening.
What a transition there.
I'm trying. There's so much to get to, and we're so little time.
We need a 7-hour podcast.
With you two, we do. These two. With you two, but there are 3 dead bodies at the Chinatown Circus. Tell us about all 3.
Well, first of all, I used to be a mortician.
Yes.
Wow.
When I was 20.
Can you do something for my crow's feet?
Yeah. Come over. I'll give you a twofer. Yeah. So I know all the rules. Pre-1925, I don't need a permit. So 25 years ago, we had a freak show.
So if a body was dead pre-1925, you don't need a permit. But after 1925,
it's like an antique. Yeah, you better have a permit after that. You look at Lenin. You know, it's like becomes...
Like old guns.
I didn't know that was a law. Yeah. Did you know that, Hannah?
Mm-hmm. I was going to go to school to be a mortician.
She knew.
We're bonding here.
25 years ago, a freak show came through, and they were like, we got Uncle So-and-so on our ranch. I'm like, bring him down. And they did. Yes. And they come back every year and do another freak show, and we have another memorial service for Achille. His name was Achille Chatouillet. And he was a really crappy clown. He was like a drunken mess. He wasn't even French. He just tried to get on the French, you know, thing with his shield. He died of chronic nephritis, which is kidney damage from drinking too much. Last request was that he would always be on display. So they had him hermetically sealed in his casket in clown makeup. And he's wearing his Shriners Parade outfit from 1906 in Detroit.
Right.
You can go to our Facebook page and see a clip of the very first memorial service we ever did 25 years ago.
Oh, I got to check that out.
Yeah. His casket's on the stage. People were performing in his honor. It was very somber. You know, they're playing taps and everything. And right. The family's like, ooh, you know, faking it. And a magician gets up at the end and did some juggling because he loved juggling.
Right.
And he did it terribly, but the thought that counts. And then he pulls out a case and sets it on the stage and unzips it, and out jumps a live rabbit. And you can see this on a quote. And the rabbit jumps up on a stool, leans into the microphone, and says the closing benediction like a black preacher. Amen! Freaked everyone out. And you can see that clip on our page. It is so, people were like, ah! What that really was a trick microphone that leaked yogurt. A trained rabbit, and I'm backstage going, hallelujah! Yeah, it was so great. Something like that every time they come back, you know, dear Lord! Yeah, it was really
hysterical.
He's got a centerfold in the Ripley's book last year.
Right.
I have a wonderful framed certificate from Ripley's congratulating me on my corpse collection. Yeah. My mom is so proud.
I'm sure she is.
No.
Ripley's the TV show got canceled because they... filmed that year.
The arm of Claude de Lorraine. It's a human arm in a shrine. It was on Ripley's with Dean Cain, and you're not supposed to photograph it. I didn't say that to them. And real quickly, it was Claude de Lorraine was a French nobleman, turn of the century, Paris. His wife was a singer. Not too good. And she wouldn't sing during World War I, but when it ended in 1918, no one else sings. And she got on the Paris Opera stage and slipped and broke her neck. And he freaked out. He was in the booth overlooking the stage, freaked out, and shoved his arm right through a window. And they had to amputate his arm. And instead of throwing in the trash, he enshrined his own arm. So this is the shrine of the arm of Claude de Lorraine. And
that's at the Chinatown East. You're not
supposed to take a picture of it.
Why?
I have not.
It's cursed if you photograph it. I don't know why. I've seen about 250 people take pictures in the last 25 years. I've never really heard of any problems.
But those people were never heard
of. I've never really seen any of them again either, yeah. And Ripley's is off the air. Oopsie. Yeah. But the thing is, with that, you can leave something and get a wish in 24 hours.
Right.
I have a trunk load of stuff that's almost full.
Right.
We just redid that whole area, so we're going to bring it back and put glass over it so you can see 25 year, you know, worth of offerings. And people go, well, what's the deal? I go, well, there's two rules. The first rule is you have to be Chinese. No, I'm just kidding. No, the first rule is whatever you leave, it has to come from you. You cannot borrow it. And the second rule is you can never verbalize what you wish for ever.
Hmm.
And in 25 years, I've never heard of anyone not getting their wish.
Very nice.
Because they can't verbalize it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Once you verbalize
except for 3 weeks ago when we can, I get my damn wit. I said, child, what did you do? She goes, what you mean? I said, you leave something from yourself.
Right.
No. I said, uh-huh. That's mm-hmm. your problem. What you? I borrowed a dollar. We can't do that.
Yes.
There's Hello Kitty keychains, rings, watches, dollar bills. There's a human foot over there in the corner. Don't even want to know what they wish for that.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah. So people, if they want to do it, we have to do it all at once. Anyway, right. The other two bodies real quickly are, I grew up in San Francisco, and I used to go to school on Nob Hill, drop down into Chinatown every day. It's Chinatown, San Francisco.
Right.
It's insane. It's yeah. like makes this one look like you know,
it's Doc the Berry Chinatown farm, of yeah. the United States.
It's gorgeous.
Anyway, it's the original
yeah.
Chinatown.
Well, pretty much, yeah. And States, actually, yeah. the real story with that is in 1906, when the earthquake happened,
mm-hmm.
it didn't look like it did now. It was all like just regular, and they were just there, you know. But what they did was they got American architects to look at designs of temples, and they rebuilt Chinatown in 1906 to make it all look Chinese. But it was American people doing that. But now it's aged 100 years, so it's like a movie set almost. You know, it's
yeah.
gorgeous. Right. Anyway, went to school in Nob Hill. I met these Chinese families that literally took me underground. They showed me the plague tunnels. Wow. That's where the opium dens are. And my name is Carl Crew, and they call me Clala Clue, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'm Clala Clue, and I actually called them up after all these years. They call me the Barnum Burbank Boulevard. I've done freak shows for years and years, and we reinvented ourselves, and we went all ancient Chinese secret.
Yes,
and when you get there, you wander through the back alleys of Chinatown.
Right. It was more of a circus thing than kind of a pirate thing. Actually,
well, pirate thing was pre-circus.
Right.
Yeah.
A House of a Thousand Corpses. That design with the colors of red and yellow stripes,
yeah.
apparently inspired by the CIA.
Well, the art director came over and hung out with us for a couple, few months, you know, before we did that. And we anyway,
right?
So they brought the body of Fa Choi down. Fa Choi was a magician for underground opium dens in 1914 in San Francisco.
Mm.
Now he's embalmed with pure mercury,
right?
And he was good and terrible,
right?
Yeah, but he's got a grill. He got a grill, baby. Yeah,
nice.
And they check. Believe
gangster.
Me, they come back every few months. Mm-hmm. Okay, all there. You're like, I'm going to steal a Chinese dead. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, and I love the family. They're like
right.
family. So he had a monkey for an assistant in the opium dens, and the monkey outlived him by 10 years.
Wow.
When the monkey passed, they stuffed him, and I am getting the monkey to sit right next to him.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah. Cool. And he has a fake hand. He chopped his own hand off in an opium den magic show. Guess little osmosis Ooh. Was going on, yeah. So they put this fake hand on him, and all the fake skin fell off. It's 2000.
Right.
It's 1914, yeah, or 1914, yeah. That's right.
I've opened for jazz singers like at Hop Sings. You remember Hop Sings?
Oh, I remember.
Del Rey? Yes. And like the audience would be, they'd clap like this, you know, hey, well, yeah, man, yeah. you know, but. I can't figure out being in an opium den.
Oh yeah,
you
can kill him. Yeah.
Where are you from?
Where
are you from?
Not big laughers.
No, you know I. By the way, a few years back, I was actually in Centerfold in Guns and Ammo. They had me there holding my sawed off. It was real nice.
Well, interesting because I remember when I had you on the show, Carl was like, I can't believe that's the Joey Gaynor. Now. He was impressive because I guess you told him some Andy Kaufman stories.
Oh, Andy was my, of all the mentors, of all the guys I knew, Andy was the only guy who would say to me, he'd call my house, And my mom at the time would answer the phone. I lived with my mom a long time because I took care of her. My mom was always driving.
Now, did you meet him at the Comedy Store?
I would be working at the Comedy Store and drive from Whittier back and forth. I mean, I'm not going to have two apartments and pay all this money.
No, I understand. Stuff. But did you meet Andy Kaufman at the Comedy Store?
Yeah, I met Andy at the Improv, actually.
Improv, okay.
And then I got to know him at the Comedy Store with the wrestling women and everything. But he'd call my house, and my mom would answer the phone. Now, Andy, if you went up to Andy and you started doing one of his characters, he'd walk away from you.
Right.
You could not do Latka or anything. He'd walk away.
Right.
He calls up, and he says, "It's Andy Kaufman. I want to speak to Joey." And my mom goes, "Oh, Andy Kaufman." And she goes, "Tippy-ta." And I could hear him on the other side of the phone go right into Latka.
Oh, so he did that for
and
her.
And they're both going back and forth with this gibberish.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then she's talking to him, and yeah, New York, and I live here, but I'm from Jersey, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, I like it over there. Oh, yeah, blah, blah. Oh, I love when you do this thing and when you do Elvis. And then she goes, "Oh, Andy wants to talk to you." I'm like, "Oh, that's, oh, great." You know, I'm standing there. Oh, yeah. Oh, is it for me? Oh.
Yeah.
So, he would call me up from time to time and go, "What are you doing?" Nothing right now. Good. Get in the car. Come and meet me at Pioneer Chicken on Sunset. Or meet me over here. Meet me there. One day we went and wrestled women.
How was that?
That was great. What do you mean? You know, I lost. Oh, what more do you want?
Was that in front of a crowd or just at his
house? No, just at this apartment. He went up to this apartment.
he was tripped out with wrestling.
There were these two girls there. They were both in great, I mean, they were both gorgeous, and they were in great shape. And he goes, "Okay, you're going to wrestle that one." And I'm like, "I am?" And the next thing I know, I'm pinned down and whatever. And there was no sex. That's what was wild. But
there was arousal.
Yeah. But anyway, I did a lot of different things with him. When Bob Smooter broke his arm, I was refereeing for Andy at the store. And
I think I've seen a clip of you, because I remember I saw a clip, and it's like, that's not Zamuda refereeing.
No, it was me. And what was crazy was, in the main room, he was going to wrestle, and he would come out and start with, "You women should be home, maybe cooking a little meal for your man. You shouldn't have jobs." And right to the throat. And, I mean, women, after the first week, the women that started showing up were not like yourself. I mean, they were like ready to kill somebody. They were wearing combat boots. These were big girls. And they really want. And Andy would, we'd have to pick the women for him to wrestle, and we'd make sure it wasn't somebody that wanted to really kill the guy. Because they were, I mean, I refereed for him one night, and yeah, I cheated. I felt that he deserved the win. And a bottle whistle passed my fucking head.
Wow.
A beer bottle. Wow. And I hear a woman go, "Oh, fuck, I missed. You motherfucker." And I'm like, "All right, we got it." So we would get the hell out of there, you know. And the best was, I'd say to him, "Boy, they want to kill you." And he'd just be going, "Oh, great, great." And the thing was, people love to hate him.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people don't understand is, if you get the audience to hate you, that's no good. They got to love to hate you.
Right.
It's like Fred, it's like wrestling. It is wrestling.
Yeah.
If you are a heel in wrestling, and I have been a heel manager, and the bigger the heel I was that night, the interfere in the match, give the guy brass knuckle, whatever, and they booed me and threw shit and want to kill me, you come out of the place, and there's all these kids lined up to get my autograph.
Oh,
you were great, man. We loved it. You gave the guy the brass knuckles. You just were booing me. No,
so cool.
People go to wrestling to see the bad guy lose. They don't go to see the good guy. They go to see the bad guys. And Andy was from, "I'm going to be a bad guy and make you like me."
Right.
And it took me a while to learn how to do that. But when I finally learned the secret, he kind of taught me the secret of how to do that.
That's okay.
And it's you know, I mean, I'm happy to be doing a lot of stuff. I was sick for 3 years, so I'm happy to be back doing this, doing everything.
We're glad to have you back.
Oh, so am I.
Let me tell you something. And where's the time go? Let me tell you something.
Already?
It's almost.
Well, wait a minute. You know, I just want to say,
because we haven't talked about the other. You have a question?
Well, no, I wanted to say we did Bigfoot wrestling at my place.
Oh.
Yeah, they set up the whole main room was one wrestling ring.
Yeah.
It was broadcast on Twitch.
Oh,
and
wow.
All these superheroes would wrestle Bigfoot. It was insane.
They had a Bigfoot.
Yeah. Not a real one, but
no,
yeah.
No, but a guy.
I
would have loved that.
Oh, you would have loved it. You would have loved it.
Oh, okay.
I identify with that, trying to be my friend Lana, Lana Lloyd, she was the glitter goddess of the Sunset Strip. And she married Alice Cooper for a week. Okay. And, you know, she
that qualifies.
Yeah. So anyway, she used to do all the extra work for all these shows. And she would call me up. She goes, hey, we're going to go on the show. You know, you're going to make money and you can pretend to be my... So we went on Moral Court. And I went on as her neighbor who lived in a condo right next to her. And I was complaining. I was suing her because I have children here. And she's coming out here showing her breasts. You know, what am I doing? I can't see the kids, you know? And, like, you know, the whole thing was, like, all the audience were her friends. And they didn't know we were friends. And I'm like, you know, if I wanted to see udders, I'd go to a zoo, you know?
Oh.
And, like... I lost $1,000 with that one, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
That's a good one.
Oh, yeah. But afterwards, all the people wanted to kill me. You know, they go, no, that's my friend. She also got me on another show when I went on. It's like Hollywood, you know? You know, you just go on and, oh, yeah, I had this horrible divorce, you know? And I was on there with, like, Cece DeVille and these other people. And I'm like, it was in Vegas, and it was, like, horrible. And then the lady who was on there, a psychologist, she was going to give me free. You know, because I really, man, I'm like, really? Believe me? It's hilarious.
By the way, Hannah made her Cece DeVille face, but...
I don't like that guy.
Yeah, but...
He actually became a Christian. Yeah, he came to my club one time, and he was scared to death.
But wait a second. Now, how about your fans from Blood Diner and The Secret Life of Jeffrey Dahmer?
What do you mean?
You must have... you have a cult fan base from those movies.
I thought I used underarm.
No, but I mean, especially... Blood Diner is one where, I mean, you're ostensibly the villain, but you're so goofy, you're so likable. And Jeffrey Dahmer, it's so...
The first movie I ever got on was, I had done 17 years of repertory theater. I grew up in a repertory theater group in San Francisco, 17 years since I was a kid. Right. And then I started taking classes to gear towards film, and I moved down here. And I had collected cars. I had a Cadillac limo, 60, a 60 Cadillac limo, which was pink. And a 61 Cadillac, and blah, blah, blah. They rented the cars for me to get on a movie. So I go down to this movie. It was called Modern Girls. It was being shot downtown. I drive down
there. I've seen the videos.
I was the doorman. There's the doorman.
Right.
And, like, I'm driving down, and, like, I had a Pontiac Chieftain convertible. I'm driving, and it's hot. You know, my hair's standing straight up. I get a suntan. I go, there's the doorman. Like, get him in a suit. I'm like, okay. And so... But I knew about schmoozing. So when I was on the set, I schmoozed around and found the director, and I found the casting director, creepy casting director.
Right.
And he called me, and he said, they're doing this, reading this for this role, and no one can get it because they want him to be retarded. And everyone is reading for it, and they're saying no. And so he took me up on Sunday night to Hollywood the Hills and for Jimmy Maslin and Jackie Kong. And I go in there, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to play retarded, okay? I mean, I don't want you, whatever. And I said, I'm just going to do it animated and slow.
Right.
And so I did it. And then 3 days later, they sent it to Vestron in New York, and they called me back, you got the role. And I'm like, yeah. So that was it.
So have you had any of the weird interactions with fans? Strange ones?
Oh, many. Well, see, I run the CIA, you know, California. Right. So I get all kinds of crazy calls all the time.
Right.
You know, I'm collecting for my book, like, letters, and people send me, the aliens have come, and they're in my living room, and blah, 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 and I get it all the time. But, I mean, I do have people that approach me, especially with the Dahmer film. They I'm calling from Florida, and I just want to say, and I'm like, what? Okay, well, click. You know, because they like the movie so much. But right.
Which film is the Dahmer film? I've seen a couple of them.
Jeffrey Dahmer, The Secret Life. We were the first people to come out. I literally wrote it from police.
Did you play Dahmer?
Yeah. I wrote it from police interviews.
I know, that's why I'm looking. I'm like, movie. Wait a minute.
I saw that movie, and it creeped me out. And it's supposed to.
Right.
Because the cops come to the door, and they don't do anything, and he just continues.
I literally wrote it from police interviews with Jeffrey.
From when he's a kid. From when he's
exactly.
a kid.
I took Bill Osco was on the phone with me one night. He goes, you know what? You look a little like Jeffrey Dahmer. I said, okay. I found the police transcript. I wrote my script from police transcripts. And actually, I'm the only one that could say that Dahmer saw my movie in prison before he was murdered.
I might have that at home on DVD.
Oh, boy.
I might have bought that.
Blockbuster
was letting go of everything.
Well,
I bought everything.
Brent Carlson,
the latest DVD, we do a commentary, me and the director, on it. But I literally wrote, I got to be interviewed in front of his door.
Wow.
Before they tore it down.
Right.
And we did Milwaukee's Talking, and we did Maury Povich. And I met all the family members, you know, in Milwaukee. He's all, you know, settling down. By the time we got to Maury Povich, it wasn't about, like, you're the father. You know, this was back in New York.
This is pre-you're the father.
Yeah, back in New York. And I get there, and, like, they whip the families into a horrible, you know, like, because they wanted ratings, you know.
Right.
So it was the barbecue Carl Cruise show, basically.
I can't believe. Go ahead.
No, I just thought of Ed Gein, because he's also Milwaukee. And you just think of Ed Gein, he was the guy that, like, you know, like, what'll I wear tonight? I think I'll wear my mother.
Yeah, right.
And I can't believe we're like at an hour. We're going to be a little bit over, but I got to ask you a couple things. You know the band Haim?
We're on
the Graham Norton show, and they said, they're like, well, and Graham Norton's like, what was your first gig? They're like, we played this club in North Hollywood, and they had like dead clowns.
They said it was a clown museum.
It was a clown museum. It was like a clown museum, which is not that inaccurate.
Yeah.
And Graham Norton's like, oh, that sounds horrible. But tell us about the last course. Madame Wong?
Well, Madame Wong was... their family was friends with Fat Choi's family,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted her displayed with him. And she was a midget magician jewel thief.
Right.
San Francisco. She died in 1914, I believe. And she would come on, and she had this magic act. And this was at the Golden Gate Theater in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And they had black dragon heads that used to hang in the theater and blow opium smoke on people, get them all stoned. So she'd come out and take your jewelry, you know? She's like, aha. And, but what happened was she stole a cross from this one guy, and he was not stoned yet. So he got up, and he got a cop, and he brought him back in. And they witnessed her. She had borrowed the Lotus Jewel from the De Young Museum in San Francisco, and she made it disappear in her act. And she never brought it back.
Wow.
Yeah. She was arrested and went to prison.
Wow.
And she spent a year or so in prison, but she died in prison, thinking that she had gotten this jewel, and she hid it with the family. Well, when the family brought the body down and dressed her and everything, they brought the Lotus Jewel, which turned out to be a fake.
Wow.
And the museum was so embarrassed that they had something fake on display. It makes you wonder what's in museums, yeah. That they didn't prosecute or anything. And so that is displayed with her body. I do have the cover of San Francisco Chronicle 1913 showing she was arrested with the Golden Gate Theater.
And if you go to the Chinatown Circus, you will be giving tours and explaining all of these things.
Yeah, yeah. It takes like a half an hour.
When I was in Portland a couple weeks ago for the festival, I ran into Mark Gonzalez, who knows you because apparently he helped with the Shea St. John videos.
Oh, wow. Now, that's a whole nother deal. Now, let me real quickly... Vice Magazine just did an article about Shea St. John, calling her the Tony Clifton of the internet, okay? And that's because Eric Fournier, who I worked with for 10 years, and Shea St. John, he died. And when he died, he passed away 42. He drank himself to death. Okay, but he was a brilliant editor. Oh, my goodness. Insane. He was a maximalist. I'm a maximalist artist, too. Why would you bother with anything else? So I worked with this guy for 10 years, and he met her in an art colony. She was in a train accident, and they put her in a military hospital. It was the closest one. And it was a hospital that the real Alphabet company was doing mind control on people. And they thought they did so much on her, they thought they killed her, and someone in that was cool in there snuck her out and hit her in an art colony. That's where my friend met her. And he would bring her over, and she would be in a wheelchair. She wore a wig mask over her face.
You have to see.
I never saw her for ever, 10 years. No one ever saw her face. It was apparently
disfigured.
Yeah, but she was a movie star. I mean, she thought she was a star. And hi, and she talked this. Hi again. And she collected bats. She had a thing called Save Abused Dolls. Anyway, she was in a wheelchair. She didn't have any arms or legs because they had to be amputated, so she didn't want prosthetics. She used mannequin arms and legs. Okay, I was in horror and roaring with laughter for 10 years. We did a whole video called the Triggers Compilation because she'd come. You'd bring her over. We'd give her some stuff and props and sets, and we'd start rolling camera, and she would trigger. So something would come out that was pre-programmed. It was like amazing. It was like so, I mean, we were the first people to show this stuff. And during the underground days too. And people walk out just like roaring with laughter, but in horror, you know? And I would call
Eric. You don't know
Eric,
how to react to it. It's really weird.
I would call Eric at 2:30 in the morning to tell him how everyone reacted to the latest video, you know? It was amazing. It was amazing. She got written up in a Bizarre magazine from the UK. She now has – I finally did a documentary called Trigger Happy, Shea St. John Trigger Happy, that tells the real story. She's in a witness protection program right now. She didn't die. See, she died and said, oh, RIP Eric, RIP Shea. You know, and it's like, what are you talking about? I work with them both. They're not the same. But that's what they said to Tony Clifton of the internet.
So they had to put her in witness protection because she knows a lot of things.
Well,
something.
See, they knew Eric was dying. These people did. And they said, well, we'll make a deal with you and we'll help you out a little bit. So she can escape. So we did one video with her, with him playing Shay. So it would throw people off.
Okay.
Yeah. And okay. And for 3 years, you know, RIP Eric, RIP Shay. And I just didn't say anything. But Larry Wessel and I, we made a documentary, Trigger Happy. It's got like 151,000 hits on it right now.
That's pretty free.
Yeah, you got to check that out.
It's the weirdest thing I've ever dealt with. Yeah.
And you know, Hannah, before we go, and we got to wrap this up, but you know who has been at the CIA quite a bit? Your friend Elvira.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cassandra, she did a show Peterson.
There. Oh, does Cassandra come? I haven't seen her in a long time.
Now you know, you knew her personally, or?
Well, yeah, when I was doing Forry Ackerman's, when I was working for him, he had a 65th birthday party. And I'm doing the invitations. I'm sending everything out, and I'm going down a list, and I'm like, well, you didn't send one to John Zachary in New York. He might fly out. Well, maybe. Well, you didn't send one to Elvira. Oh, she's just trying to be, Vampira. I said, no, it's a little different. Yeah. So I send one to her, and I sent one to, and it was, they wanted, you had a, pay to come to his thing, but there were certain people that didn't have to pay.
Right.
I put her on a guest list, and he wasn't happy. But yet, when she got there, Robbie the Robot was there.
Wow!
Right.
And Cassandra Pearson, and Richard Kiel. It was all these people.
Right.
And everybody stood up to get applause. And she came as Elvira, which was very smart. I told her, "Come dressed as Elvira." And she came, and she stood up to get applause, and the place stood up.
Wow.
The only other standing ovation was for Forry. It's his birthday.
Wow. Right.
Otherwise, they stood up, standing ovation for her. And I took a picture, and the photographer's name was Lee. I'll never forget his name. I can't remember his last name. His first name was Lee. And he took a picture of me with Elvira and Robbie the Robot.
Wow.
And for years, I've been trying to get that photo. Try to get a photo from a photographer. They think that if you have the photo, their career is over.
Right.
Lee Forbes, if you're out there, Lee,
right.
I want a copy of the fucking photo. I'll give you $10.
The reason I mentioned Elvira, and I can't believe how fast the show went. Can you, Hannah?
No, I'm enjoying listening to both of
you. Here's the thing. It's Halloween.
Yeah.
The Addams Family movie just came out. The reason I mentioned Elvira, you're on the CD Elvira's Haunted Hits.
Yeah.
With your version of Frank Sinatra doing the Addams Family theme.
Sure.
Could you do that live for us now?
If you have the music, why not?
I have the music. Hold on.
Oh.
This is a Halloween treat for everybody.
Frank Sinatra doing the Addams Family. Okay. It's a little different. They're creepy and they're kooky. Mysterious. This is different.
It's going faster. Double the time and you'll make it.
Oh, this is... I'll do an acapella.
Okay, please.
Acapella be easy. It's...
Yeah.
It's
please. Yeah,
they're creepy and they're kooky. Mysterious and spooky. Hey, they're all together ooky. Hey, the Addams Family, dig. The house, it's a museum. Hey, and when people drop by to see them, hey, they're a riot, they're a doggone scream. The crazy Addams Bunch.
Hey!
Ba-da-da-dun. Me. Da-da-da-dun. Pete.
All right.
So get a witch's shawl on, or a broomstick that you can crawl on. We're gonna pay an unexpected call on the Addams Family.
Woo!
Hey, Lurch, put Sammy down. He's with me.
Great. Well, before we get going, Joey, you got a whole thing. This is Joey Gaynor, G-A-Y-N-O-R. Tell us what you got going on.
You can see me on the Comedy Store channel, Argus Hamilton's Comedy Store tonight. Also, I just did a project there with my good friend Lou Deck called Lou. What's the name of it? Give me a second. I'll remember in a second. But anyway, and that and. I got the thing on Twitch going on, and there's a whole bunch. I'm doing a one man show that'll be coming soon.
Let us know about
that. Yeah, that'll be at Lonnie Chapman. And it's Poor Lou's Almanac is the show that's on the Comedy Store channel that we just did. So that should be fun. And I'll be hanging around at the Clown Museum.
We're gonna have a Christmas show, and you're definitely gonna be on.
Ho ho ho! Right. But enough of the introductions. You three ladies wait in the car.
And Carl. The Chinatown Circus is 11334 Burbank Boulevard, North Hollywood, California. But our worldwide audience, if they want to get a taste, how do they get a hold of you and how do they see what that's all about?
Well, you got to go to Facebook, CI Abnormal Arts, one word. We have a CIA page. That's our history page, CI Abnormal Arts. When you go there, it says Chinatown Circus. That's where we post all our pictures and shows and everything.
Right. And
you can message me directly.
Yes, and you've had everybody there from, as I said, you know, Repo the Genetic Opera. You know that movie?
Mm-hmm.
They workshop the play at the CIA, but that's another show. Are these guys racking tours or what?
They're so interesting.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And Hail Hannah Box 666 on all social media on Instagram, and Goth Comedian on all social media. Everybody, I had a great time. Happy Halloween.
Joey Gaynor on Twitter.
Is this the best
Joey
month
Gaynor
of shows or what?
It is. We got to have them back. I have more questions. I have questions about Suicide Kings. And,
Suicide
Kings.
Well, we got to go. Everybody have a wonderful, creepy week.
Bye.